This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. A set of jaw-dropping legal developments turned up the heat on President Trump this week. Michael Cohen, Mr. Trump's former personal lawyer and fixer, pleaded guilty to campaign finance violations regarding payments to two women who said they had a sexual relationship with the now president. On the same day, former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort was found guilty on 8 counts of various financial crimes. Jurors were unable to reach verdicts on 10 other charges, and the judge declared a mistrial there. Now, conditions have looked bad for this president before. Last month, there was that Helsinki news conference. His zero-tolerance policy of separating families at the border sparked widespread outrage. At the beginning of his presidency, he accused President Obama of wiretapping him with no real corroborating evidence. And who can forget the Access Hollywood tape, with candidate Trump talking about grabbing women's private parts long before he was a candidate. But now that Cohen has admitted that the now president ordered him to break campaign finance laws, is anything different? Is impeachment really on the table? What about other political or legal consequences? Or is all of this distracting from the fact that Trump is turning out to be exactly the president much of his base voted for? That's just ahead on 1A. Stay close.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, ADT. America's trusted home security company can help protect you against break-ins, fires, and carbon monoxide. 24/7 emergency response when you need it most. More at ADT.com.
Hey, this is Stretch Armstrong.
And this is Bobbito Garcia, the hosts of What's Good.
We're kicking off a new season with legendary singer-songwriter Erykah Badu.
That's why they call me Fat Belly Bella, because they never know when I'm going to be impregnated.
Subscribe now.
Joining us from Philadelphia to help parse this out is Jeffrey Rosen, the president and CEO of the National Constitution Center and the George Washington University. Jeffrey Rosen, welcome back to 1A.
Great to be back.
Joining us here in studio is Michael Isikoff, the chief investigative correspondent for Yahoo News and the co-author of Russian Roulette, the inside story of Putin's war on America and the election of Donald Trump. Michael, welcome.
Good morning.
Also in studio with us is Rachel Bovard, the senior director of policy at the Conservative Partnership Institute. She's former legislative director for Senator Rand Paul and former director of policy services at the Heritage Foundation. Rachel, thanks for making time for us.
Thank you.
Let's start with a question that came into our inbox from Kristen in Florida, which I think is pretty much on everyone's mind.
I don't understand how this is related to the Russia question. It seems that there are connections that people are making, but I'm not quite understanding where the connection lies.
Good question, Kristen. That could be a good place to start. Michael Isikoff, why don't we take Kristen's question? What does this have to do with the Russia probe?
Well, the Manafort conviction was brought by Robert Mueller, who's the special counsel for the Russia investigation. Now, it is true that the charges against Manafort had nothing to do with his work for the campaign or anything to do with Russian interference in 2016, but it arose out of the original FBI counterintelligence investigation into Russian interference in our political system. And Manafort had was convicted of failing to pay taxes on millions of dollars he got in offshore accounts from the pro-Russia political party in Ukraine. Now, that's not the end-all and be-all of the investigation into Manafort. We'll see where it goes. There's another trial coming up that's going to relate to alleged illegal lobbying by Manafort on behalf of that same pro-Russia political party. The Michael Cohen stuff is unrelated directly to the Mueller investigation. It involves campaign finance violations, but it is worth noting that one of his lawyers, Lanny Davis, has been strongly hinting that Cohen has information that's relevant to Mueller. So we'll just have to see how it plays out.
Jeffrey Rosen, before we get too deep into this, we should remind folks of what exactly the basics are of these two cases, kind of the outcome of what happened with Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen. What should we know before we dive in deeper?
Well, Mike Isikoff described it very well, but the Mueller investigation, which began
as an inquiry into Manafort's possible role in corrupt interference with the election, ended up, as many investigations do, prosecuting tax fraud. It's the old Al Capone situation. You go after him for murder or racketeering and don't find that and charge the crime you do find immediately, which is a tax offense. So as Mike said, this is just possibly the first of several charges against Manafort. But the fact that it was a clear conviction is a big win for the special prosecutor, the fifth of Trump's advisors to be convicted or to plead guilty. And it's a significant event. There's also the possibility that Manafort could provide more information to Mueller. And Trump this morning dangled the possibility of pardoning Manafort, presumably to prevent him from providing more information. So that's the Manafort side of it. The Cohn side, as Mike said, is not directly related to Russia, but potentially far more relevant to the question of impeachment. By pleading guilty to corruptly bribing two models to remain silent about affairs with the president in order to influence the election, Michael Cohn pled guilty to a felonious violation of campaign finance laws. But what's especially relevant is the degree to which this might be relevant to the question of impeachment. The impeachment clause says that the president can be removed for treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. And you're finding even some conservatives today, like Brett Stevens, saying that an effort to bribe or to pay hush money to someone to influence an election is a quintessential example of the kind of interference with the electoral process that the framers of the Constitution were trying to prevent. Adam Liptak this morning quotes George Mason at the Constitutional Convention saying that Congress had to be able to remove a president who gained his office by undermining democracy. Shall the man who's practiced corruption, said Mason, and by that means procured his appointment in the first instance, be suffered to escape punishment by repeating his guilt? And some Democrats and Republicans are saying that whether or not you could bring a criminal charge against Trump, and almost everyone says you can't bring criminally indict a president while he's in office, mm-hmm. to have attempted to interfere with the election and deny voters information, whether or not a technical violation of the campaign finance laws, which it appears to be, is the quintessential example of an impeachable offense, and that's going to be very relevant, especially if the Democrats take Congress.
Yeah, Rachel Bovard, I'd like to get your take on whether and how much the president is implicated in all this. Clearly, the press corps asked White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders about this yesterday at the briefing. Here's part of what she had to say.
As the president has stated on numerous occasions, he did nothing wrong. There are no charges against him in this. And just because Michael Cohen made a plea deal doesn't mean that that implicates the president on anything.
Part of what Sarah Sanders said yesterday during the White House press briefing. How much is the president implicated in this thus far, if at all?
Well, I think it's unclear, and I think the FEC isn't even clear amongst themselves. You saw Bradley Smith, former—
The Federal Election Commission, which regulates—
Correct.
—campaign finance.
You saw Bradley Smith, former Federal Election Commission chairman, writing in the Post today saying, we're not even sure that, you know, Trump's involvement is criminal. But I think more than that, you know, the president's supporters are going to look at it like this. All of the things that happened yesterday and the day before have nothing to do with Russia, full stop. Whether or not he had anything to do, you know, with the payments or anything like that is not even clear. It's criminal. And I think also these FEC violations are sort of rampant, right? You run any kind of campaign, you're going to trip over a violation. President Obama was charged a huge fine at the time for doing so. Bernie Sanders was charged over $14,000 in fines for having foreign influence, taking assistance and payments from a foreign government in his campaign. And we all recall John Edwards, taking payments to hush up his mistress during the 2008 campaign. So FEC violations of this type are legion. And I think until it's clear that the president has done anything criminal, his supporters are not going to be, I think, interested, to say the least, in the hair splitting that's going on over whether or not this was a crime.
Now, the president addressed all this in an interview that aired today on Fox and Friends with Ainsley Earhart, one of the co-hosts. And he emphasized that this money involved in the Michael Cohen charges did not come out of his campaign. Here's part of what the president said.
Later on, I knew. Later on. But you have to understand, Ainsley, what he did, and they weren't taken out of campaign finance. That's a big thing. That's a much bigger thing. did they come out of the campaign? They didn't come out of the campaign. They came from me, and I tweeted about it. You know, I don't know if you know, but I tweeted about the payments. But they didn't come out of campaign. In fact, my first question when I heard about it was, did they come out of the campaign? Because that could be a little dicey.
Does that make a difference where the money came from? Is that a point worth emphasizing?
No, it doesn't. There are strict laws on the limits on how much one can give in a political campaign. Now, it is true that the candidate himself or herself can give unlimited amounts for her campaign. But remember, this begins with Michael Cohen violating those limits, saying he purposely put up $130,000 to pay off Stormy Daniels out of his own pocket. So that's a violation by him. He said in federal court he did this at the direction of the president, and then the court documents show that he was then reimbursed by the Trump Organization, the business of the president. That's another potential violation.
If Cohen pleaded guilty to breaking campaign finance regulations under the guidance from President Trump, isn't President Trump guilty of breaking the same regulations? Jeffrey Rosen, why don't you answer that one? Wouldn't that implicate the president directly?
Yes. If the president, as Michael Cohen said, directed him to pay hush money in violation of campaign finance laws, that would indeed arguably be a felony. Now, it's true that you have to prove that the president intended to break the law and knew that it was wrong. And it's not an absolute slam dunk case in a federal court. But the question is whether it would qualify for impeachment, because that's really the standard under which this president would be judged. And what's striking is the connection that people are drawing between this and the Clinton-Nixon impeachments. Your other tweeter asked, you know, if this president can get away with this, why didn't previous presidents? Brett Stevens' piece today is interesting. He says, if breaking the law by lying under oath to conceal an affair was impeachable, that's Clinton, why is breaking the law by violating campaign finance laws to conceal an affair not impeachable? If cheating the electoral system by means of burglary, that's Nixon, was impeachable, why is cheating the electoral system by means of an illicit hush money not impeachable? So what's important to recognize is that not every criminal offense is impeachable and not every impeachable offense is criminal. So in other words, whether or not Trump would be convicted of the campaign finance violations after leaving office doesn't determine whether or not it's an impeachable offense. But the broad statement is that there's a strong case, far stronger than there was for John Edwards, who was unsuccessfully charged with paying hush money in violation of campaign finance laws, that President Trump did indeed direct Cohen to violate the law, and in that sense, he himself violated the law as well.
Rachel, I want you to chime in on this, but first, Jeffrey, I want to, if I could push back just a little bit. We had this long debate on the program, I think last month. We had Alan Dershowitz on to talk about his book, like The Case Against Impeaching President Trump, and his argument is that the Constitution is clear that the way to impeach someone is to show that they have committed a crime, that all impeachable reasons have to be inherently criminal because that's the way the founders wanted it and that's the way the Constitution designed it. I guess by that rubric, you could argue, well, that may or may not have applied to Clinton. But at least his argument is you have to show that the president committed a capital C crime in order to even begin the process of impeaching him.
It's not a universal view. There are two great books out on impeachment. There are a whole bunch of them recently. But I really strongly recommend the one by Joshua Matz and Lawrence Tribe, To End a Presidency. And Cass Sunstein has a new book on impeachment, and Michael Gerhardt does as well. And all of them emphasize that the framers did not believe that you needed a technical violation of the law to impeach. What they were most concerned about was corruption of the electoral system. That's why they talked about treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. The quintessential example of an impeachable offense was if the president were a foreign spy taking money from Russia or France in order to corruptly gain office and betray the United States, and that would be impeachable whether or not it was criminal.
Right.
And similarly, efforts to bribe the Electoral College was what George Mason was really concerned about, the idea that you'd gain your office by illicit means and therefore subvert American democracy. So obviously, you know, Gerald Ford said impeachment is whatever the House says. So it's not like there's Supreme Court law that says what is impeachable or what isn't.
Right.
But
right.
what we can fairly say is that the framers of the Constitution, in being concerned about impeachment, were not focused on technical violations of federal law, but preventing the president from subverting the electoral system by corrupt means.
Let me let Rachel Bovar chime in on this, and then we'll dive in on the phones. Rachel?
Well, I think you're dealing with two issues. The first is that we don't even know that a crime has been committed. We have FEC commissioners openly speculating that there hasn't been a crime committed. So I think we have to underscore the fact that all we have on this so far and against Trump is the allegations of one Michael Cohen who's trying to keep himself out of jail.
Who is a convicted felon, we might
add. Yeah. So we need a lot more evidence to buttress that claim and to take it into court. But second, when we talk about impeachment, impeachment is not just you push a button and there's impeachment. It's a political question as much as it is an institutional question. The House and Senate have to, well, the House first has to decide they want to take it up. And, you know, it's not simply because some criteria are met, it automatically happens. And I would suggest that there are political risks inherent for the Democrats in doing so. I mean, we were referring to the Clinton impeachment. That really backfired. I'm sure Michael can speak much better about that than I can, but that did not work out well for Republicans.
In Texarkana, Texas, Joseph is on the line. Hey, Joseph, what's on your mind?
Hi, I have one question to ask. I'm confused. I've been following this since it started. You had the salacious, unverified, so-called dossier that we still don't know today because everything's been so redacted that may or may not be the truth. And did they acquire that warrant to surveil the Trump campaign illegally or not? We still don't know that. If that was illegal, this entire situation we're talking about is illegal. Or, I mean, how do you prove something? I don't understand that part. I'm not a lawyer, but that's what's confusing to me. If someone's done something wrong, yes, they need to pay for that crime or whatever they've done wrong against this country. But that's my confusing part. If this was illegal to begin with, then everything and everyone charged so far is illegal, is it not?
So it sounds like you're asking, Joseph, about kind of the legitimacy of the very beginnings of this whole process that led to these latest two convictions. Okay,
yes,
Joseph,
yes.
Thank you for that question. Jeffrey Rosen, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong on this, the dossier, the so-called Steele dossier, went to the FISA court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, as justification to begin a probe. And then the investigators had to come back with new evidence after that dossier to say, see, this was useful. Here's what we found. Please let us renew this warrant. That's the way that it works, right? Like a court had to determine it was legit enough to start investigating. Am I reading this right?
That's absolutely right. The FISA court had to determine that there was probable cause to initiate the investigation. You know, it's disputed about whether or not the Steele dossier by itself was probable cause, but FISA judges and others have said that there was enough additional information for them to authorize the initial warrant. But that's separate from the fact that the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, appointed a special counsel to investigate on his own authority, and Robert Mueller began his investigation with full subpoena authorities and has built his case against Manafort and others, based on independent evidence.
Yeah.
So for all those reasons, the investigation is legitimate and there's no threat to the convictions that we just saw against Manafort.
Just a couple of fine points on that. The use of the dossier became an issue in the question of the Carter Page FISA warrant. And it's worth pointing out that Carter Page has not been charged with any crime by Robert Mueller. How much they got from Carter Page in that FISA warrant, we don't know. But it doesn't relate to the charges against Manafort, to the other aspects of Robert Mueller's investigation. So the weight to give to the dossier is still unclear as to how much Mueller or the original FBI agents relied on it. We just don't know the answer to that.
We'll continue our conversation in a moment. Stay close.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Sam Sanders here. On my show, we talk to stars on the rise. Jimmy O. Yang from Crazy Rich Asians and Silicon Valley. Brian Tyree Henry from Atlanta. Darcy Carden from The Good Place and HBO's Barry. All in your feed now. Join us on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
Let's get to some more of your questions and thoughts as well, including what this might mean politically. John in Louisville is curious as to what this could legally mean for the GOP as a whole. Here's his question.
Since Cohen was also in charge of RNC finances during the 2016 campaign, does his admission of guilt to illegal campaign finance activity, which has also implicated Trump, implicate the RNC? And if so, does this have a wider effect for other candidates who were elected in 2016 when all of this was happening? Also, if all of Mueller's investigation is regarding the Trump campaign and the campaign as a whole, and there are many people from the campaign now coming out and pleading guilty, does that disqualify the entire campaign, thus Mike Pence, from taking over in the event of an impeachment or resignation? Thanks for covering this, and love your show.
Thank you, John. We love that you used our new app, 1A Vox Pop, to send in that lovely crystal clear audio file with your question. Michael, yeah. What about this? Wider implications for the party?
Some of that strikes me as a stretch. Obviously, it depends on whether there is specific evidence that implicates the RNC or others at the Trump campaign. Now, it is worth noting that in the court papers with Michael Cohen's guilty plea, the Justice Department documents make reference to Cohen doing this in coordination with one or more members of the Trump campaign. We do not yet know who those other members would be. At a minimum, Donald Trump would seem to be one of them because Cohen said he did all this at the direction of Donald Trump. But taking it beyond it, we just got to wait to see what Michael Cohen has else to say. Now, clearly, Lanny Davis has been out there. Michael Cohen's attorney, suggesting he's got relevant information to the Robert Mueller inquiry. If he does, it would seem to contradict what Michael Cohen has already told the Senate last year when he said he had no information about anything that smacked or even was a hint of collusion. So he may have to cop to additional felonies if he really does now have something to say about Trump and Russia. But, you know, look, we got to wait and see what it is. One final point, obviously Cohen can talk to Mueller, but Congress can call him at any time, including tomorrow, put him in public testimony before the TV cameras, and we could learn exactly what Michael Cohen has to say. There's nothing that's stopping any of the congressional committees from doing so, and in my view, they ought to.
Rachel.
So I think to his question, I want to be very specific. Cohen, the charges that he pled guilty to have nothing to do with, they do not in and of themselves have wider implications. I think to Michael's point, we don't know what's coming up next. This is a guy trying to stay out of jail. He's, said he doesn't have information.
He's going to jail.
Well, yeah. Right. Yeah. He's trying to stay out of jail more yeah. jail. Yeah. But he said he doesn't have information, and then now he says he does. So, all of that doesn't have anything to do with the specific charges. They were quite specific. But on the second point about whether, about what Mueller's doing and does Mueller investigating the entirety of the Trump campaign, Mueller's charge is very specific, and that is to look at any evidence of Russian collusion in the election. Anything outside of that is not his charge. And that is why when he uncovered criminal wrongdoing by Manafort, he was he spun it off into a different investigation because that was outside of his charge. And that's why the charges that Manafort had to cop to had nothing to do with Russia, because that's outside of Mueller's mandate.
By definition, it had nothing to do with Russia, because if it did, Mueller would have kept it.
Correct.
Well, no, but Mueller did bring those charges. That was a Mueller prosecution.
Right, but it had nothing to do with Russia, and it, despite having charged him, pressed him, put him in jail, and tried to get all this information out of him, still doesn't have anything on Russia, suggesting that there's not much there.
I think I kind of get what you're getting at, is that the Manafort thing is not kind of in the mainstream of the Russia investigation. It was still prosecutable, and clearly he was convicted, but in terms of the Mueller team being able to say, aha, here's a core part of what we need to know for our investigation, in their view, it didn't rise to that level.
They tried to get information out of him about Russia, and there was nothing there. There was no there there.
Let me get to a few more of your questions, particularly Jeffrey Rosen. We got some questions about pardons. One listener emailed, how come the president doesn't have the power to pardon state crimes? Don't federal powers supersede those of the states? Is the president precluded from commuting state convictions and sentences too? And Ron wrote on our Facebook page, would it be illegal if Trump had promised Manafort a pardon? What do we need to know about pardon powers going forward?
Great questions. The pardon power is generally considered illimitable on the federal level, but the president doesn't have the power to pardon state crimes because he's not sovereign of the states. There was a notion of dual sovereignty at the time of the framing, and state governments had their own powers in the name of we the people, and the president, although federal law is supreme over state law, does not have the ability to pardon a state death sentence, for example. He'd have to persuade the governor to do that. As for whether he could promise Manafort a pardon in exchange for silence, no, he cannot. When Bill Clinton was leaving office, he was accused of corruptly using the pardon power with Mark Rich. That was never charged or proven, but it was an allegation. And if the president were to say, hey, I will pardon you in advance in exchange for your silence, that could violate federal laws independently and could be prosecutable. So in other words, even though the president can pardon anyone he likes, he could still use the pardon power in a way that would violate other federal laws.
Before we keep going on the phones, one more question for you that was directed to you, Jeffrey, about the president's broad powers. William emailed, other than impeachment, if I understand the principle of the unitary executive correctly, as the country's chief law enforcement officer, the president has unlimited powers to commit crimes without any consequences. Taking this to the extreme, then the president can literally commit murder and not be held accountable. Is this possible? What were the framers' thoughts on this? Jeffrey?
The framers believe that the president could be accountable criminally after impeachment, but that the proper remedy for violations of law while he was in office was the impeachment power, because people shouldn't be able lightly to overturn the results of an election, and that impeachment was ultimately the right remedy. Now, there is a debate about whether the president could be criminally indicted in office. When Brett Kavanaugh was working for the Starr investigation, he wrote a memo saying he thought the president could be indicted. Others think the president could be charged but not tried. But the overwhelming consensus, and the Justice Department and Robert Mueller have adopted this view, is that the president cannot be criminally tried while he's in office. The final question, you know, it's a great question. Is the president above the law? Is the president a king? The question of self-pardon, I mean, it's something that is so dramatic, and it's never been tested either in English law or in American law. No king or president has attempted to pardon himself. You can argue it either way. On the one hand, the Supreme Court has said the power is illimitable. On the other, the entire Constitution is structured around the idea that the president is not a king,
right,
and is not around the law. It's not above the law. So in the remarkable event, I mean, I think you have to call this, constitutionally unprecedented, that the president were going to try to pardon himself, that, I guess, would go up to the Supreme Court, and it is hard to say what the court would rule.
Let's get back into the phones now with Karishnan in Tallahassee, Florida. Hey, Karishnan, what's on your mind? And am I pronouncing your name correctly?
It's Karishnan.
Krishnan.
And my question is, what will it take for Congress to act? And there is complete silence from Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell. So what will it take for them to act on these allegations and charges?
What would it take for them to act on these? Thanks, Krishnan. Michael, what do you think?
Well, I think if the Democrats took take back control of the House in November, that would be the critical factor that would prompt Congress to certainly launch multiple investigations into every aspect of this. Whether they go the impeachment route is, you know, clearly going to depend on what more is out there. I do think it's worth noting, though, that the president's latest interview in Fox with Fox News, where he says, if I'm impeached, the market will crash. You know, it's kind of sounded like the president is holding your 401k hostage unless he gets off. You know, I don't know how effective a line that's going to be.
Although, we'll play out. I got to say, there might be some truth to that. I mean, impeaching a sitting head of state in the United States would be a cataclysm. So I get it, but like we'd live. But I do kind of see what he's talking about.
For the president himself to be making that argument.
But for sure, even if it is potentially true. Yeah. Let's keep going on the phones with Zarif in Jacksonville, Florida. Hey Zarif, what's on your mind?
Yes, I last question. Why is it a crime to use campaign money? Congressman Corrine Brown, she's in jail now, Senate. When she used campaign money, it's not a crime for President Donald Trump. Before the election, New York Times or either Washington Post aired that he had used campaign money to pay off lawsuits, and nothing was done. It only aired one time. So why is it a crime for the African-Americans, but not a crime for many Caucasians?
Rachel?
Well, on the Corrine Brown case specifically, she used a tremendous amount of campaign money for personal funds and then covered it up. She basically took money under false pretenses. It was supposed to be for a nonprofit, and then she spent it on herself and her family. That is clearly in violation of the law. What I think is up for debate right now and what people are trying to figure out is the extent was Trump liable in any way, right? Was he responsible for reimbursing the campaign and not telling anyone about it? Or is this all just, you know, a little bit of a tempest in a teapot over what he did? What we know, what Cohen and Manafort did was wrong, and they've been convicted on that. That is wrong. I think what is unclear is whether or not you have to tell people that you paid money to get someone to sign an NDA. That is unclear about what kind of legal territory we're in at that point.
Right, a non-disclosure agreement. But I do kind of hear Zarif's question, like, at what point does it directly become criminal to Donald Trump with the way that the campaign money was used? Is it just a matter of substantiating what Michael Cohen said about the president? If prosecutors can prove that Michael Cohen told the truth when he said, Donald Trump told me to do this, does Donald Trump then end up in the same kind of territory that Corrine Brown ended up in?
Well, I think that's – we have to have more than Michael Cohen, I think, to your point.
Right, but if we did.
If we did, you know, I think that's more of a question for Jeffrey, to be honest, than me. You know, I'm not a lawyer. But I do think to the caller's question about sort of the unequal treatment, I would point him to the case of Duncan Hunter, a white member of – sitting member of Congress who was just indicted on a whole host of campaign finance violations very similar to Corrine Brown, actually.
Jeffrey, I wonder if you would chime in on that. I hear Zarif and this kind of idea, as one of our listeners wrote in yesterday, of Teflon Don, right? How Donald Trump has all these people in his orbit that are taking the fall for him, and he's not taking the fall, made even more insulated by the fact that he is now the president of the United States, and the presidency comes with all this immunity, and this, you know, he is, to borrow a line from the movie Lincoln, clothed in immense power. At what point does the emperor lose his clothes?
Well, it's tough to unclothe the emperor just because the emperor has this huge immunity against criminal prosecution according to the Constitution. That's the main frustration. You know, as to the legal point, yes, if there were other evidence that President Trump said to Michael Cohen, hey, please use your personal money so we can pay this hush money to avoid embarrassment in the campaign, then that would be a violation of campaign finance laws, stronger than the case against John Edwards. And if it eventually came to trial after the president were to leave office, then he could be convicted on it. But I think the main frustration is to say the president is just treated differently than everyone else because you can't get him into criminal court. And you just have to wait until he leaves office in order to bring those charges.
Rachel Bovard, Senior Director of Policy at the Conservative Partnership Institute, Michael Isikoff, Chief Investigative Correspondent for Yahoo News, and Jeffrey Rosen, President and CEO of the National Constitution Center, thank you all for joining us. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Joshua Johnson. This is 1A.